Hello, hello, hello again, and welcome to another episode of the Sound of the Kootenays podcast. I'm Al Woodman. Thanks so much for listening in. I want to start by wishing everybody a happy new year. And for those of you who are dedicated subscribers to the show, you probably noticed that there was no episode released in December. I did have every intention of putting one out. However, in all the hustle and busyness of the season, it just didn't fit into the schedule. And, to be honest, I didn't really have enough local Kootenay Christmas albums to choose from either, so maybe you're actually thanking me now for not releasing one. All kidding aside, I'm excited to pick things up here again in 2019 and continue to bring you some of the best music and interviews with some of the most interesting and creative people that call the Kootenays home. I really appreciate all the feedback I'm getting from you as well, and based on some of that feedback, I think there's going to be some changes and adaptations and some morphing of the format of the show in the coming episodes. One thing that I've heard and realized for myself is that maybe the shows are getting a bit too long. So I will endeavor to try to shave them down a bit, but hopefully not at the expense of too much music or information. One of the ideas that I've had is that I could release two separate episodes in a month. One can be the artist interview and spotlight the music and story of an artist. And then a second episode could feature a variety of new and notable music from around the region. If you have any suggestions about how I can make the show better, please do feel free to let me know. My email and contact information is in the show notes. Another exciting way I'm looking forward to shifting things a little bit is through some giveaways. Woo-hoo! Free stuff! And since we're kicking off a fresh new year here, and the spirit of giving is still hanging in the air, I'm going to be extra generous. So starting right here, right now, in this episode, there's going to be not one but two giveaway announcements of some free music and one of the hottest tickets to a sold-out show coming up at the Capitol Theater. I'll give you some more details about that a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, I'm going to have an interview with Ferdy Belland. He's a Cranbrook-based musician who will share the story of his musical career in cunning detail. And we're going to hear some new and old music from a few artists in both the East and West Kootenays. All of that and a whole lot more coming up. So without further ado, let's get this show on the road. First up on our show today, I've got some music by a Kimberley-based musician named Heather Gemmel. I came across Heather through one of the Kootenay Musician Facebook pages. I sent a message off to her to introduce myself and tell her about the podcast. Had a chance to meet up with her not long ago as well. And she shared with me some of her music that she'd recorded in the past. And she told me a little bit about what's upcoming for her future. I'm going to share that interview with you as she's closer to releasing her new material. But for now, I wanted to kick this show off with a song from her 2011 album entitled The Road. And this song is called Slow Down.
Presentations to show, bills, taxes, and loans, but life goes on. Let's not focus on the wrongs. Let's take a step back and survey where we're at. Sometimes it's hard to see the possibilities when we're stuck in high gear and we're running from our fears. We need to find a way out. Find a way out, even if it takes a scream or a
I have in my hands three copies of that album by Heather Gemmell called The Road. I also have three copies of her 2014 release, Peaks and Valleys. And I'm going to bundle these up, and three lucky listeners can win them. If you would like to be one of those three lucky listeners, all I ask is that you send me an email, and in the subject line, simply type free CDs. In the body of the email, maybe you can tell me what your favorite live music venue is here in the Kootenays, and who the last artist was that you saw there. I will be making a random drawing from all of the entries received on February the 1st, and I will be including links to Heather's brand new website and her Bandcamp account in the show notes for this episode. Now, back in November, the Blizzard Music Festival in Roslyn announced its lineup and festival dates. It's coming up this month, January 24th to 26th, and will feature a stellar lineup of bands from across the country and an impressive list of bands from all over the Kootenays as well, including Shred Kelly, Moontrix, the Eisenhowers, the Devils You Don't, and the Hilties. Tickets, if there's any still available, can be found at the Flying Steam Shovel in Rosland and at ticketweb.ca. Here now is a song by Shred Kelly from their album Archipelago. This is Stay Gold.
high in the air as you came upon a winter affair. You live fast and you made mistakes, and a breaking point would break. Now you're carrying a weight on your head.
Well, so far this episode seems to be firmly rooted in the East Kootenays, having Heather Gemmell from Kimberley and then Shred Kelly from Fernie. And now we're going to move over to Cranbrook, where I had a chance to sit down with Ferdy Belland at the Hideout. Ferdy and I had met once before very briefly at a mutual friend's wedding, and his name had come up many times since then in my conversations with other musicians here in the Kootenays. When an article was published recently in the Cranbrook Townsman with the headline of "Who the Hell is Ferdy Belland?", of course I was just as curious as anybody else might be what was the story behind that headline. And so we connected again, and we arranged the chance to sit down and talk, to really get an idea of where he's come from, where he's at now, and a glimpse into where he's going. So I hope you'll enjoy it. I should point out that there is a bit of colorful language in this interview, and I never did promise that the Sound of the Kootenays podcast would be just black and white forever. We find ourselves today in Cranbrook in the basement of the Hideout Pub. Been here many times for beers and wings and all that, but never seen the basement, so this is kind of nice. Got a spot by the fireplace, and we're going to hang out and chat music in the East Kootenays for a little bit. It's my pleasure to welcome Ferdy Bell into the podcast today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Ferdy, your name has come up in numerous conversations that I've had with people to talk about the music community in the certainly in the Cranbrook area. I do a lot of traveling for work, and I've been coming out here, and I like to check out and see what's going on in the music scenes in the different areas that I get to go for work. And one of the, you know, the people that I've talked to about what's going on in Cranbrook, there's got to be something going on in Cranbrook, and lots of people have said you need to call Ferdy Belland. So how come everybody's telling me to call you when it comes to the Cranbrook music scene?
Well, that's probably because I've been a stubborn idiot for the past 30 years, and I just keep kicking the musical can around and around and around here in the fair Key City. There's lots to talk about with the arts and music scene here in Cranbrook. It's always been vibrant, but it's really only been, in my experience, since the turn of the century here that there's been more of a welcoming spotlight being focused on the arts and music which Cranbrook has to offer, and actually it being acknowledged and embraced in the open on a public street level, for lack of a better term. I mean, like, the thing is, like, when you talk about Kootenay culture, always, like, when I was a teenager back in the 1980s here in Cranbrook just fucking sucked. Okay. I'll have to say, okay. Like those are the days when Cranbrook got its erstwhile nickname of Dinktown, mostly because, again, this was a festering industrial pit. You either worked in the sawmill, or you worked in the mines, or you worked on the railroad. Everyone drove an F-350. Everybody wore a denim jacket. It was a violent town. It was a dirty town. However, I saw beyond that, and I also saw how Cranbrook has had a rich jazz culture going back to World War II. And Cranbrook has one of the most thriving community theater troupes in all of British Columbia. Consistently wins Theater BC awards year after year. And I know this firsthand from having, you know, been involved with Cranbrook Community Theater as an actor and sitting on the board of directors. Wearing my other hat as a journalist, writing for 25 years for the Cranbrook Townsman, there's just so many people to champion here in town, right? I mean, like, you have the girls from Lilix who struck out back in the early 2000s and made a global name for themselves writing their power pop and pop rock stuff. You've got nationally celebrated Shakespearean actors like Brent Carver coming here from town. You've got young actors like Jeremy Raymond, who starred in the last two Star Trek movies. You have, Eric Lindquist, Martin Lindquist, who has popped up, gone all over the place. Courtney Stevens. In the musical world, you've got, the good old Goats a few years ago were making some pretty good splashes through the CBC Radio 3, like all the way across the country.
Yeah.
Now you've got Clayton and Joelle. It goes on and on. But the thing is, for me, I think what made me, and I mean, I do my bit to champion the arts here, not so I can pat myself on the back, because it needs to be done. And I didn't see a lot of people really putting in the effort to promote the arts, especially the music and performing arts side of things here in Cranbrook. Because a lot of times when you discuss, pan-Kootenay culture, it just seems that there's a line divided between the West Kootenays and the East Kootenays. And when you were describing West Kootenay culture versus East Kootenay culture, it was like describing the culture of West Germany versus East Germany. And that's how it was for a long time until now. Again, with like with the decline of the sawmill jobs and the decline of the mining jobs and the decline of the railway jobs, Cranbrook has become yet another post-industrial Canadian blue-collar town that's been reinventing itself for the 21st century, mm-hmm. much like Kamloops or Prince George. But you know, but now you see things like the beautiful Pagoda Bandstand that was built in Rotary Park, where the Fisher Peak Performing Artists Society has successfully promoted music on Saturdays in the park and bringing thousands of people in. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the young entrepreneurs who repurposed the old fire department and turned it into the fire hall tap house and have these, you know, and you know, just had the Tequila Mockingbird Orchestra play live there on Monday night.
Right.
You know, which was a big notable shot in the arm to Cranbrook nightlife here in town. Mm-hmm. You see what Heidi Romick has done here with the Hideout Brew Pub. You see young entrepreneurs who are now making a name for themselves in the Chamber of Commerce and the Downtown Business Association who are taking the terms of downtown revitalization to make it a very real thing. And again, you keep just having more and more younger musicians, younger actors, younger painters, you know, younger whatever artistic discipline that they're loving and exploring themselves within. Mm-hmm. They're coming out, and Cranbrook is now a safer and more welcoming community to do that in. So things are starting to accelerate exponentially.
Right.
You know, and after 30 years of, you know, being a committee of one, as I was saying, it's nice to see it finally taking root. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I'm flattered that you've met a whole bunch of people saying, "Oh, you got to talk to Ferdy Ballander." No, but by all means, this is my disclaimer. I am by no means any sort of central magnetic axis around which the Cranbrook arts and music scene exists. The Cranbrook arts and music scene was in existence, strong and loud and bright, long before I became a part of it. I just try and earn my right to be within it by trying to be the best musician I can be, by trying to be the best journalist I can be, by trying to be the best small-scale concert promoter that I can be. I'm 47 years old. I'm still young enough to believe in what I'm doing, and I'm far too old to change my ways now.
For sure. You touched on a number of really interesting points there, and I'd love to hear more about all of them. I want to back up a little bit, though. You said being in Cranbrook as a teenager. How long have you lived in Cranbrook?
My family's been in Cranbrook since October of 1984, when I was 13.
Right.
So I got here right at the beginning of grade 8. And, yeah, I noticed that there was like a darker, more grimmer youth culture here than what I had known beforehand, just being, you know, being in Revelstoke or being even in... You'd be in the far northeast there in Hudson's Hope. But there was always... there were good musicians who were my teenage cronies, you know. Writers like myself, you know, who are, you know, writing their own space opera, science fiction adventures and stuff like that. Or, you know, or shoot 'em up Mac Bolan pastiches and that sort of thing. I come from a blue-collar family, but my parents always just were very good about, they saw how I was attracted to the arts as a young kid, and they always nurtured that. Mm-hmm. You know, there was always music around the house. My older brothers, who were 7 years older than I was, they were teenagers in the 1970s when I was a little boy in elementary school, so I got all their hand-me-down 1970s rock and roll records, which, you know, put the bug in my brain and in my heart at an early age, and my parents were country western acoustic guitar strummers, and so, you know, I grew up in a musical household where you could listen to Cheap Trick and you could listen to Farron Young, and there was no dichotomy about it. Mm-hmm. It was just, if it was good music, then it was there. So yeah, I moved to Cranbrook again, like you know, cartooning and writing were my first loves, and that's what I excelled at that. You know, and then finally, when I was in my mid-teens, I made the move between just being a lover of music and finally, you know, learning guitar from local hero Jim Cameron. After 6 months, I realized that guitar baffled me. I couldn't figure out the geometry of the fretboard. Mm. And I stumbled into bass by accident It was sort of it was that common frustrated guitarists thing about four strings, no chords. How hard could it be? And then I found out how deep a well it was, and it was actually good. It was actually the most wonderful thing that could have happened to me then, because I just fell in love with the bass and just in its function in all forms of music. And myself and my friends began forming our own garage bands, right, like when we were getting out of high school. And at that time, that's when the whole do-it-yourself grunge rock, alternative rock explosion was happening. And so, you know, I began cutting my teeth, promoting all ages concerts around town, because there wasn't anything like that happening. There wasn't even a youth center here in Cranbrook. There still isn't a dedicated youth center here in Cranbrook. And, you know, there was a lot of juvenile delinquency happening then as now. And so, you know, we'd rent out the community halls back in the days when you didn't have to take out a $5 million liability insurance policy to rent a community hall for an evening.
Yeah.
And put on our punk rock shows or our heavy metal shows or our grunge rock shows. And, you know, and in a town of 20,000 people, getting like 300 kids to show up, like, that was an amazing feat.
Yeah.
And it was a very exciting and joyous and, for, you know, virtually violence-free situation. And I did that up until I moved to Nelson back in 1992 so I could attend the Selkirk College music program.
Right.
And that was another stunning move for me as well, because, I mean, I was going to school with people like, say, like Frazee Ford, who became a member of the Be Good Tanyas.
Right.
And Mitch Merritt, who later became the lead guitarist for Eric Pritchett's Modern Country Band. And, you know, a number of people who I later became bandmates with, you know, at the turn, you know, and when the millennium turned. And that was a funny story too. I auditioned. I was scared shitless because I had only really seriously been playing bass for about 4 years up until that point. And I went to my audition, and there was Mark Spielman, who's still on the faculty at Selkirk College now, you know, looks like Drew Carey, plays like Marcus Miller. He's amazing. My Yoda. So I won my, I passed my audition. And he said, yeah, okay, well, we'll see you come September of 1992 here, you know, only a couple of months away. And yeah, there's six other students who have auditioned for the bass, so you won't be alone. So day one came, 105 students in the first year class. I was the only bass student who showed up out of the seven who passed the audition.
Wow.
So here and you got to remember, like as far as like dividing up what sort of instrumentalists were in that music school, you know, you had like 35 guitar players and 8 drummers and 11 keyboardists and a whole bunch of vocalists and some, you know, some woodwind players and, you know, that sort of thing. And then there was me, the lone bass player.
Hmm.
There was one bass student who was in second year in the senior year at the program, but he quit by Halloween. And so within 7.5 weeks of attending music school, I found myself being the only dedicated, specialized bass student. And so I was busy. Mm-hmm. And my learning curve shot up like a Soyuz rocket. It was awesome. It was a lot of work at the time. I was in every ensemble class week after week. I was performing in every performance class on the monthly basis. I was playing in everybody's graduation recitals. I was spending 14 hours a day either doing studies before classes opened up for the day, doing my classes throughout the day, my private lesson, my everything like that. And so by the time the whirlwind ended in April 1994 came, I'd met a bunch of younger Nelsonites and I formed my very first serious band, Cellar of the Sun. The drummer, Dale Butterfield, later became the drummer for the Junior Boys. And Ezra Cannon, the guitarist and the vocalist, he changed his name to Ezra Crack and moved to the squat punk scene in New York City and formed the bands Leftover Crack and Morning Glory and made a pretty serious name for himself in the modern punk scene there. So there was my momentary rub with greatness right there.
Absolutely. So are you in multiple bands at a time, or are you kind of one project at a time that you're working on with music?
It depends. When I was younger, I liked to be... I try to be musically monogamous, so to speak, where I just single-mindedly focused on the one band that I was playing with. Because again, I didn't want to be a bass player so I could just join some interior BC bar band, right, and play Trooper covers and April Wine covers. That wasn't the reason why I wanted to become a musician. I wanted to be a songwriter. I wanted to collaborate with songwriters. I wanted to write and record albums. I wanted to tour. But there came a time, especially in at the late 2000s in Vancouver. I think I was in seven bands at one time. I played in this power pop band named The Feminists from 2003 to 2008, and I suppose that was my highest kick at the professional music can. Towards the end, we were on CBC Radio 3's Top 10. We were up there on the charts at the same time. Hawksley Workman was a name and that sort of thing. You know, playing with the Weaker Thans and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, toured Canada three times, got a lot of campus radio airplay and blah, blah, blah. Band fell apart due to irreconcilable personal and emotional differences. You know, I was lucky that I, you know, being primarily involved in the Vancouver scene from like the early 1990s onward, I was quite lucky to find myself just working with a lot of really talented and inspired people who weren't egotistical pricks, and people who became my friends and people who are still my friends. And I was busy. So right now, I guess I'm polyamorous when it comes to my musicality. It's like, I mean, half gig will travel. I perform as a solo, you know, singing, accompanying myself with acoustic guitar. I do that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I'm currently playing bass in an instrumental progressive metal band named Phaeton. I'm also playing bass in a folk fusion band named Garuda. And I'm also playing bass for Biff Naked.
You left me like a broken doll in pieces as I took the fall for you. You don't chomp. You left me free falling like space junk, burning up in the atmosphere. But I'm a fool, a suffer rocker, 'cause I let you in my heart that one last time. I've had enough, made up my mind. I'm gonna get up and out and wild. I love myself today, not like yesterday. I'm cool, I'm calm, I'm gonna be okay. Uh-huh. I love myself today, not like yesterday. Take another look at me now.
I think we connected after the article came out. I think it was in the Townsman, and the headline was, "Who the hell is Ferdy Belland?"
Well, I'll tell you the story how I got the Biff Naked gig. Everyone, her name is Beth Torbert, okay? And we knew each other through mutual friends in the Vancouver scene back in the early 1990s, playing the same lousy beat-to-shit bars and all of that. And, you know, she left Chrome Dog, and her solo career started, and then she became Biff Naked. And I, you know, kicked the can with a bunch of other anonymous bands, and I became nothing. But, it was weird because this ongoing Cranbrook connection kept popping up with Biff, because for a 5-year period, a local Cranbrook guitarist by the name of JD Ekstrom, one of, you know, local celebrated legendary musician that came out of Cranbrook, he became Biff's lead guitarist for a 5-year period up until the time he passed away from a sudden heart attack at 42. But as that was happening, JD introduced Beth to his good friend and my good friend, Steve Allen. And Steve and Beth became a couple. For the last year that JD was alive, JD died. And Beth was very close to JD, and of course she was grief-stricken, and so the band shut down for 6 months. Mm-hmm. She got better, and then it was time to reform the band. And so she just said to Steve, "Well, why don't you be the guitarist for the Biff Naked band?" And Steve learned the songs, and what do you know? It, you know, goes from like sitting on his bed playing Kiss riffs, and all of a sudden he's playing for Biff Naked. Steve's roommate, a highly accomplished Vancouver-based lead guitarist named Dave Martone, was approached to become the bass player for the band. And so for the last 3 years up until this previous summer, the lineup was Beth on vocals, Steve Allen on guitar, Dave Martone on bass, and Chico Misomali on drums. But at the end of August, I guess like what had happened was that, without going into too much whatever soap opera detail, I guess relations between Beth and the other band members and Dave were starting to get strained, especially over the last year he was in the band. And then finally, they were playing in Ottawa at the end of August for the big Pride Festival that happens there on Parliament Hill. And I guess the straw that broke the camel's back was, I guess Dave was berating Steve and Chico on stage while Beth was delivering a pump-up speech to the audience. And I think the beratement was caught on mic, and so the show ends, and, you know, and after, you know, "Thank you, good night," and everyone gets off stage, Beth, you know, turned off her stage switch and just said, "That's it." So she gets on the horn with her manager, Peter Carroll, former lead guitarist vocalist for the Carroll Brothers, who were a big name in Canadian rock in the late 1970s and the early 1980s. Been Beth's manager for 25 years, that sort of thing. She gets on the horn with him and just says, "This guy is no longer a member of my band." And so Peter was like, okay, calm down. Okay, I understand, you know, he's been treading on thin ice for a long, long time, but are you sure now is the time to do it? I mean, we've got shows coming up like 2 weeks from now. And I guess Beth just was adamant and just said, "Either you get rid of him or I quit my own band." And so Peter's like, okay, don't be hasty, okay, you know. So Dave gets called on the carpet. "Yeah, Michael Jackson's on the phone. He says you gotta beat it. You know, your plane leaves at 8. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out." Peter gets back a hold with Beth and says, "Okay, he's gone. But I don't want you to worry, okay? I've got all sorts of hotshot session musicians here on speed dial. I'll just call one of them up and we'll plug him into the band and then we'll keep going." And Beth just said, "I want somebody I know. I want somebody I trust. I want somebody who's a good bass player. I want somebody who's a good performer. And I want somebody who is professional and is not an asshole to be around. You need to give Ferdy Belland the right of first refusal on playing bass for the Biff Naked Band. And, of course, that's where his response came in. Well, who the hell is Ferdy Belland? And so Beth said, Peter, remember at my wedding 2 years ago? Like, Ferdy was the guy that came up to you with a big stack of Carol Brothers records asking you to sign them. So there was silence. I got into the phone and then, oh, him? Oh, that guy was awesome. Sure. Okay. I'll give him a call.
Right.
Then all of a sudden I get the phone call from Steve saying, this just happened. And so he explains all of that. And I go, holy fuck, are you pulling some kind of shitty prank on me? No, man. No word of a lie. This is very real. The gig is yours if you want it. Do you want it? So, of course, I said, well, fuck yes. Of course I want this. Like, goes, good, because Peter Carroll's going to be calling you in about 20 minutes. So I, oh, shit, I better go off the phone with you and get my game face on. So, you know, cleared my calendar, sat patiently. My phone rang. Sure enough, Peter Carroll. Hello, Ferdy. Hello, Peter. You know, and I had a really good casual and comfortable conversation with him for an hour, just spelling everything out. Mm-hmm. I just said, look, I was kicking the can as hard as anybody, you know, down in the Vancouver scene for years. I gave him an outline of my musical history. I just said, look, like I can send you YouTube clips of me on stage. I can give you a bunch of character and musical references if you like, because you and I know a lot of the same people. Mm-hmm. He goes, okay, I'll tell you this, Ferdy. Can you learn 24 Biff Naked tunes in 2 weeks? Go, absolutely I can. He says, okay, well, if you want to do that, then we have a show coming up on the 14th of September at Grant McEwen University in Edmonton, playing for their annual Frosh Week celebrations. If you think you can do it, I will fly you out to Edmonton from Calgary. I'll put you up at the Hyatt Regency overnight. I'll pay you $450 to play 75 minutes worth of music, plus I'll throw in an extra $150 for your per diems. If you pull this off, then you are the permanent bass player for the Biff Naked Band, and you'll be involved in all performances and recordings until Beth and I deem otherwise. So I said, your terms are more than acceptable.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing you on the 14th. So I hang up and I immediately do the Edvard Munch thing where I'm just grabbing my head and screaming, saying like, what the hell did I just do? But I said, all right, roller coaster is over the hill now. Let's roll with it and see where the strange torpedo leads, shall we? And so for the next 2 weeks, I spent 4 hours a night, every night, living with Biff Naked Tunes. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, like within 3 days, I had her set down. And so I spent the rest of the final week and a half just, you know, going over the songs, you know. And then finally the 14th came. And sure enough, WestJet flew me out, was met at the airport, got driven into the, you know, to the hotel, dropped my bags off, got driven out to Grant McEwen University, where the big, huge, you know, aluminum tube and canvas awning kind of festival stage was. You know, Beth's all, oh, we're so glad you're here, big hug. Went in cold, no advance rehearsals with the band, just walked on stage, you know, hundreds of people milling about, like on the grass in front of the stage, yay Biff and all that. It was just Beth grabbed the microphone, welcomed everybody, counted in 1, 2, 3, 4, and I nailed it.
Nice.
And yeah, I learned a few. I surprised her. I learned some background vocals during the choruses. I'd step up to the mic and add that to that, and she'd be all looking over, going, "Yeah." And afterwards, you know, big hugs to everybody, saying, "Wow, it's like you've always been playing with us." You know, it made me feel good. I felt 18 all over again.
Yeah.
If I didn't have a good reputation, I would never have been considered for that.
Yeah.
And again, like the Biff Naked thing is just one of my current musical adventures. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that come the 21st of this month, it'll be the release of the first full-length album from Phaeton.
Yeah.
Which is my good friends Kevin Thiessen on lead guitar and keyboards, Daniel Erth on lead guitar, Colin Wrighton on drums and percussion, and yours truly on electric and fretless bass. what can I say, King Crimson on 45 RPM speed, I guess. Like, it's all instrumental. It's the biggest technical workout I've ever played in. You know, and again, and I've been in 25 bands since 1990. We're definitely musical with it. There's lots of, you know, there's lots of crazy moving passages which harken back again to the progressive rock and art rock bands of the 1970s. But there's lots of, you know, crunchy metallic riff-orama that comes around with it, and, you know, roller coaster drums and all of it. I mean, at least with being an instrumental band, you don't have to worry about a language barrier when you're playing overseas. And no, I mean, like, we're not putting any lofty expectations on that sort of a band, but we're certainly, you know, we're certainly open to whatever comes our way with that.
The self-titled debut album by Phaeton was released on December the 21st and is available now through their Bandcamp page.
And the other band that I'm playing with is Garuda, which I'm very proud of. I stumbled into that one by accident as well. Steve Pearson from Nelson, he's a speech therapist by trade, but he's also a sitarist. And he heard that I had a sitar, and, you know, we had a mutual friend in Jason Dethridge, amazing hard-rocking drummer out of Creston. And, yeah, just folk fusion, I suppose. I guess if you were listening to any of the John McLaughlin stuff from the 70s, like, you know, Shock T or any of those acoustic folk fusion bands like Pentangle or Fairport Convention or the Incredible String Band or, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, it's got that sort of a vibe because you've got the sitar, electric bass, and drums behind it. But, so yeah, a lot of Hindustani classical influences, of course, which you can't escape with the sitar being in the band, but more like British psychedelia going through there and stuff. It's really cool. Looking forward to playing here. Actually, I just secured us a gig here at the Hideout, so that's going to be fun.
When is that?
That will be in either late January, early February. And again, we'll be playing out in Nelson. I believe we're trying to get a show at the library at the Hume Hotel.
Yeah.
So definitely do that. Visit www.kootenairaga.com for all your Garuda needs.
Like the same, we're getting younger.
So one of the things that I became aware of through your social media account is that you're a bit of a record collector.
Yeah, if you talk to my wife, she would label me a pathological hoarder. But yeah, I've been an avid record collector since I was a teenager and all that. I have 6,000 albums, I think. The last time I counted them was like about 6,000. It's probably more than that, but yeah, I've got huge libraries that I've been building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, books, music, movies, my own cultural museum.
Right. Well, is your wife encouraging you to start putting price tags on them and open your own record store or something?
I used to have my own record store, actually. That's another one of the things that I did. Actually, just next door here where the H&R Block building is now, that's where my record store was 20 years ago.
Okay.
For sure. But, and I've thought about that, and especially now with the vinyl resurgence that's been happening over the last 10 years, you know, I mean, like, I would love to do that again. I spend too much time buying stuff from record stores to take the time out to actually open a record store.
Right. And so is this music of all genres? Have you got a full spectrum of stuff in your collection?
It's mostly like hard rock, heavy metal, punk rock, psychedelia, garage rock, prog, folk rock, like 60s folk, a lot of British Invasion stuff, a little bit of classical, a lot of classic country. A lot of that was the fact that my mom gave me her country record collection, which was all, you know, stuff from like 50s, 60s, 70s up until the Willie and Waylon outlaw country stuff. And after that, I didn't really pay attention to a lot of country music that was made after 1980. There's always been a sizable vinyl listening audience worldwide,
mm-hmm.
you know, and nothing ever died away. It's just that, again, it's been with the decline and death of the compact disc that's really focused on vinyl as being, once again, really the only hard copy physical format for music that really means something, because it's a difference between reading a book either as an ornate hardcover with an embossed cover or a paperback you picked up in an airport.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone like me who was buying vinyl back when vinyl was still the previous generation's dominant musical format, it's been really cool for me to, well, I feel vindicated. I feel vindicated for my pathological hoarding.
Yeah.
Because it's not just me. Like, I'm not just a lone wolf screaming in the darkness over here. I mean, there's, and it's awesome, again, like, just being a musician who works in independently operating bands too. Like, I've done vinyl releases when I was with the Belushis. I did a vinyl release when I was playing in the Bison Brothers. We're going to do a vinyl release for Phaeton. I mean, like when we finished recording and mastering our album, we made sure that, yes, we got our nice digital masters back, but we also got a separate analog master.
Mm.
Because when we save up the money and we do ourselves a vinyl run, now we got it in the bag so we can do it.
Yeah. One thing that's come up with the previous interviews that I've done is we've sort of found our way to defining what success is in your endeavors as an individual. And I'm curious to hear, how do you define success as an artist?
There's a few answers to that question, and I'll say my answer is multifold, put it that way. And it's like this. I have been successful as a musician for my own personal satisfaction in the fact that I went from being, you know, a bewildered teenager who could barely spell the word bass, and then ended up, you know, through hard work and dedication and perseverance, now I can pick up a bass guitar, and I won't say it's effortless, but it's easy for me to make the instrument walk and talk. Mm-hmm. And I find myself being comfortable and confident in a variety of different musical genres. I'm not monochromatic as far as what I can do as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as being versatile, well-rounded, and, you know, technically polished, that's one element of success for me, just for my own personal satisfaction. You know, you talk to, you know, like say Robert Bateman, going from drawing stick men to being able to draw like a lifelike lynx.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of accomplishment as far as like your own expression and creativity goes. One of the many things that I loved about music is it helps feed my love of travel. I mean, I never saw all of Canada until I saw it through the cracked windshield of a shitty tour van.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the United States. Like I never would have seen the U.S. unless I was touring the U.S. You know, when I toured Germany in 2011, it was the same thing. It was like, I did it. I was there. I was in Europe because I was touring as a musician,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I used to be some dumbass kid from an anonymous town in the Canadian Rockies. And here I am in Berlin doing a 7-day residency,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's success just unto itself doing that. Seeing my byline in print in nationally distributed periodicals, you know, which had circulations of 25,000 people and getting, you know, like fan letters back from people who, you know, like liked what I wrote. Like, that's success, you know? And again, like, that's just the thing, like being successful in not just one field, but in several fields. I mean, can I make my mortgage payments every month by being a journalist and a musician? Not yet, you know? Monetary success has still evaded me, you know, because I'm too busy chasing the art, as it were, and just being respected and accepted by, you know, by people who I admire. Like, that's success.
Yeah.
For sure. Going to Save On Foods and pricing out toilet paper and having a complete stranger come up to me and saying, hey, congratulations on the Biff Naked gig. And, you know, me go, oh, thank you. And not knowing who they are, you know, that's success unto itself. There's still, as far as like accomplishments of like where would I want to go from here? Like, I mean, I never want to rest on my laurels. And again, I'd like to, I mean, I'm the only one that's putting any kind of boundaries on what I can or cannot do as an artist. I mean, I'm writing for Beatroot out of the Calgary edition of Beatroot magazine. I've been, a lot of my former colleagues who I wrote with at the Nerve magazine are now higher ups at Exclaim, so I'd like to write for them if I mm-hmm. could. I'd like to play more prog metal with Phaeton. I actually want to get more serious now that actually the Biff thing has rolled down the pike. I want to get more serious about just doing more and more music, because it was told to me by my teachers at Selkirk College when I was going to music school way back when. They said the more time that you spend being a musician is the less time that you'll spend hating your shitty day job. And, you know, and even with like a, and even with the way the music industry has changed and morphed over the decades, as it always has, you know, like, I mean, I'm not one of these guys that's going to, you know, weep into my black pillow at night and, you know, and sell my Rickenbacker bass because, you know, I'll never be able to sell 10 million records the way Def Leppard used to or something like that. Like, that's not breaking my heart. It's like I'm a performer. I love live performance. And if it's forcing, you know, and if the current digital world and streaming world is forcing, you know, professionally ambitious musicians to actually be serious about trying to build a career out of it, it means they got to tread the boards, as I said, 100, 200, 300 days out of the year, then I'm up for it.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, like I'm just going to go down fighting.
Awesome. Well, it's, there's lots going on, and it's great to hear all about what you've got going on. I want to say thank you so much for taking some time and hanging out and having a couple of beers and telling me all about what life has been like for Ferdy Belland in the music industry and beyond. It's been fascinating.
Thank you very much. This has been very fun.
Whenever I try to say goodbye, the words stick in my throat. They die before they have a chance to rise, just like the gourd I'm choking on. No wonder I lie beside myself. And it helps me to admit that I submit to it, because it fits me like a glove I'm taking off. This little hell I have devised. And all along, you've been the stuff of song. And of course I don't regret, just don't forget the sweat of moving on and on has long been strong upon me. So please don't hurt yourself tonight. We'll be right back. That was the Gentle Infidels with Ferdy Belland on bass from an album recorded in 2010 called Insolence and Indolence. And once again, I'd like to give a shout out to Heidi and the staff at the Hideout Restaurant and Brewhouse in Cranbrook for their generous hospitality and for accommodating myself and Ferdy for our interview. Thanks very much. Okay now, as promised, it's concert ticket giveaway time. On March 22nd at the Capitol Theater in Nelson, On the Road Productions and the Caslow Jazz Etc. Festival welcome Shaky Graves. This is a sold-out show, probably one of the fastest shows to ever sell out there, and I have a ticket to give away to one of you awesome listeners. All you have to do is send me an email and tell me where is the next closest show to Nelson on his upcoming tour, and you'll be entered to win. So send your answer to soundofthekootenays@gmail.com. Get those entries in. I'll be making the draw on February the 28th and announcing the winner on our Facebook page on March the 1st. I've got some more music to share with you now, and this next song is from a rock duo from the Slocan Valley called Immune to Cobras. They've just finished releasing their third album in single-song installments on SoundCloud, and the title of the album is Use Your Immunity 2, which of course follows on the heels of the first Use Your Immunity album, which I believe came out very late in 2017 or early in 2018. Both of those albums are available on SoundCloud, as well as 2016's Buster Douglas album. It's a whole lot of rock for a two-piece band. So from Use Your Immunity 2, this is Moon with No Sun.
Search for signs of parade. Ice goes on.
Yeah, that is Immune to Cobras. They are Carl Nygren on guitars and vocals and Robin Sittig on the drums. That album and their other two previous albums are available to be listened to on their SoundCloud page. And coming up next, I've got a track by Sess and Dazza, a couple of hip-hop artists here at the Kootenays, and this is a song of theirs called Feeling All Right.
The rhythm says I'll hit him while I'm smoking a tall split. Five bomb beats ever since I've caused seats and cause heat like a bombs and warm laundry. It feels good making a bona fide outer side functified rhythm type and slip inside, step inside my office of sorts. I'm never taking shorts unless it's to the beach, of course. Sess and Dazza to make your mind spaz and get the record turning like the devil's has. The style is fab, not fit with no creatine. I speak the truth, so I sure hope that you'll believe in me. I pay dues and Sherlock saw clues. They can still bang beats while I'm slamming booze, damaging fools from headbanging it true. Take the story to loving on your daily news. So get your hands up, wave them high. Sess, Dazza, if you're feeling the vibe, you're feeling alright. Well then, let it be known. We're about to shoot the shack down till the speakers blow. Yeah, get your hands up, wave them high. Sess, Dazza, if you're feeling the vibe, you're feeling alright. Well then, let it be known. We're about to shoot the shack down till the speakers blow.
Oh shit, now it's deep. Horny like the front of a stampede. Corny like the colonel stuck in his teeth. Just a rapping, steaming pile of me. Smoking my rocks and you're finding a concrete. Okay, jokes aside, that's success, so enjoy the ride. Sight rhymes all night just to get the crowd hype. Negative is suicide, it bumps like drugs and lines. Confident like thugs with nines. Famous like the Trail Times. Nelson is a healthy state of mind. If you're baked, I'm Baker Street, you're fine. Imitation, hippies, and gay pride, that's fine. Beats the hell out of people being a con. Positive. The state of mind, the heart shines, the smarter felt. Playing cards you're dealt, dealing with a pair of kings here to claim our belt.
Yeah, so get your hands up, wave them high. Sess, Dazza, if we're feeling the vibe, you're feeling alright. We've been ready, been known. We're about to shoot the shack down till the speakers blow. Yeah, get your hands up, wave them high. Sess, Dazza, if we're feeling the vibe, you're feeling alright. We've been ready, been known. We're about to shoot the shack down till the speakers blow.
That's such a cool track. That again is Sess and Dazza and Feeling All Right. I found that song on Dazza's SoundCloud page, and along with it was the story of how their friendship started and how it's grown to what it is today. You'll also find a lot more really great hip-hop music in there as well, so check it out. Next up, I have a track by Brett Wildeman from Rosland. He put out an album in 2017 called The Tools We Possess, and from it I've chosen the song Silver Lining.
The mountains, they humble me. By wheat powders the nose of the bee. The calmness of the sea provides us time for thought we all need. Lake water sobers and the rain provides hydration for the souls, our insides. Sleep makes for open eyes. Ruffled skin, we're so alive. Wherever you take me, I'll go. Release tends to fertilize. to last the eventual growth of alpine pine. Wherever you take me, I'll grow a while. Wherever you lead me, I'll walk that mile.
Brett Wildeman. Brett contacted me through Facebook upon my request here on the podcast and sent me a message to introduce himself and tell me about the album that he had put out, The Tools We Possess. I put it on while I was doing some chores around the house, and I just left it on repeat. And there were so many interesting and different things that were coming out of the music, it was often distracting from the chores, what I would have to come back and pay closer attention to what was coming out of the speakers. So I'd recommend that anybody go and check out his album, and for not only just Brett, but for all of the artists that I'm featuring here on the show. I think they're all worth supporting. If you like the music that I'm playing, please do go and listen to it online, purchase it online, share it with your friends. That's how good music gets around, is we just got to talk about it and keep it flowing around. And please, like Brett did, reach out, send me a message on Facebook, introduce yourselves. If I haven't met you yet, I'd really like to. If I haven't heard your music yet, please send it on. I look forward to hearing it and hopefully sharing it. Well, that about wraps it up for episode number 5, or is it episode number 1 of 2019? Both are true. I'm so grateful for the chance to meet and listen to so many really, really interesting people through this podcast. I've been fortunate enough to make a bunch of new connections and to actually strengthen a lot of other already established connections. Thank you to all of you. I want to be sure to also say a specific thank you to Barry Jones and Sincerity Sound. He's been very helpful to me in this podcast venture and still is. He's a very good friend of mine. So thanks, Barry. And I'd also like to thank Paul Hinrichs, On the Road Productions, and the Caslow Jazz Etc. Festival for their support of the show and the ticket giveaway for Shaky Graves. I'll be watching for your emails. I want to also again thank Ferdy Ballin for your time and your generosity with your stories and your honesty. It's a pleasure to meet you and hang out with you again. And I want to thank the listeners. Yes, you there with the ears. Thank you for bringing them to me and to the Sound of the Kootenays podcast. And I hope you're all sticking to your New Year's resolution still, to be kinder to yourself, and to do that with a lot more music. So until next time, friends, stay tuned.